The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
General Secretary Gorbachev, if you seek peace, if you seek prosperity for the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, if you seek liberalization, come here to this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, open this gate. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
That's from one of Ronald Reagan's best-known speeches while serving as the American president during the 1980s, the Tear Down This Wall speech in Berlin on June 12th, 1987. And as we covered earlier this week, of course, that wall came down. It did come down in 1989. Welcome back to the show, by the way. This is Stephen Flurry, and you're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program this week, you can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Let me just play one more clip. This is clip three from that same speech that Ronald Reagan gave in 1987.
Behind me stands a wall that encircles the free sectors of this city, part of a vast system of barriers that divides the entire continent of Europe. From the Baltic south, those barriers cut across Germany in a gash of barbed wire, concrete, dog runs, and guard towers. Farther south, there may be no visible, no obvious wall, but there remain armed guards and checkpoints all the same. Still a restriction on the right to travel. Still an instrument to impose upon ordinary men and women the will of a totalitarian state.
And so as President Reagan was saying there, it wasn't just Berlin, the city of Berlin. The entire continent of Europe was divided. And as I said on Monday, that wall in Berlin came down on November 9th, 1989, and that was the beginning. That was the beginning of the end, you could say, of the Soviet Union. Everything, after that wall came down, everything really did fall apart for the Soviet Union until it finally did collapse there at the end of 1991. In December, early on in December 1991, Ukraine held a referendum in which 90% of the voters favored independence. 90%. They wanted to break away. They wanted their independence. And within weeks after that referendum, all the other Soviet republics were in agreement. We want our freedom. We want our independence. We want the Soviet Union to be dissolved. And then on December 21st, 1991, Russian General Secretary Mikhail Gorbachev, he did something that many in the West never thought that they would live to see happen. He announced on Russian TV that the Soviet Union would be disbanded. Gorbachev's policies of glasnost, that means openness, and perestroika, meaning restructuring, those policies certainly helped to end the Cold War with the United States, but they also played a significant role in bringing down the Soviet Union. Those policies, of course, together with Ronald Reagan's policies to bring down that empire. Well, today marks the 25th anniversary of the end of that empire. Here's a news clip from back at that time. This is clip 4.
Gorbachev, the last president of the Soviet Union, resigns. The red flag of communism is lowered over the Kremlin. Yeltsin takes control of 30,000 Soviet nuclear weapons. And world leaders pay tribute to Gorbachev's achievements. Good evening. The red flag came down over the Kremlin tonight as President Gorbachev resigned and brought to an end 7 decades of communist rule in the Soviet Union. Right to the last, Mr. Gorbachev said he was unhappy at the breakup of the country, but he pledged to do everything he could for the new Commonwealth of Independent Republics. The Russian President Boris Yeltsin now has his finger on the nuclear button.
That's an ITM news report back from late 1991. Gorbachev made the announcement, as I said, on December 21st, and then he resigned 4 days later, December 25th, 1991. The Soviet flag was taken down at the Kremlin, and that was it. It was over. Or was it? Did the Soviet Union's demise put an end to the spread of communist ideology? Was that the last hurrah for tyrannical rule? Did it even bring about a dramatic change in Russia's national thinking or national character? The late political scientist Hans Morgenthau, he wrote this many years ago on Russia's national character. He said, in Russia, the tradition of obedience to authority of the government and the traditional fear of the foreigner have made large permanent military establishments acceptable to the population. This has happened over and over and over again throughout Russia's history. This mindset that time and again has cleared the way for totalitarian rulers to rise up and dominate. Following Gorbachev stepping down, Boris Yeltsin was elected as Russia's first president. And initially, he tried to reform Russia's ailing economy. He introduced some Western-style private enterprises. But really, this just led to much of the economic power in the country falling into the hands of a few, the oligarchs. And Yeltsin, meanwhile, he had no interest in establishing institutions that might challenge or weaken his authority. In 1993, in fact, he strengthened his presidential powers, introducing a new constitution. And this led to all kinds of corruption in his administration. I read to you the other day that article by Garry Kasparov in the Wall Street Journal. And he explains how that even though there was all this partying early on in the 1990s with Yeltsin and Clinton and so on, that this led right into Vladimir Putin grabbing hold of power in the year 2000. And all the pieces were in place, really, for history to repeat itself. That journal article from the other day, I think this was over the weekend, it says when Vladimir Putin took power in 2000, he found few obstacles capable of resisting his instinct to remake Russia in his own KGB image. He also found a Russian public that felt betrayed by the promises of democracy and afraid of the violence and corruption that they saw all around them. Putin, of course, cited the collapse of the Soviet Union as the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the 20th century. That's what Putin believed coming into power. This was a great catastrophe, what happened in 1991. This is a great catastrophe, what Gorbachev presided over. And so, as I went through on Monday, he came into power, promising the Russian people a lot of stability in exchange for their freedoms. And he let it be known that he was going to rule with a strong arm. I read through some of Bret Stephens' piece from last week. He actually, some of this history I just kind of either skipped over or paraphrased quickly. But in September 1999, this is just a few months before Putin came to power, these agents of Russia's security service, known as the, at that time, known as the FSB, they planted these explosives in a basement of an apartment building in the city of Ryazan. And these bombings were instrumental in bringing Vladimir Putin to power. This was months before he assumed control. He comes into power, I think, in March of 2000. And notice what Brett Stevens says here. Following that bombing in September 1999, Stevens says, among the members of the Ryazan inquiry, so this is what happened following that, was liberal politician Sergei Yushchenkov, an investigative journalist, Otto Lastis, and Yuri Shlinkenkin. It says Yushchenkov was assassinated in April 2003. Latsis was killed after a Jeep rammed into his Peugeot in September 2005. And then Shikochim fell violently ill in June 2003, lost all of his hair, suffered multiple organ failures, and then died 16 days later. This article says the following year, Viktor Yushchenko, a Ukrainian, you might remember some of this. I mean, we've covered a fair bit of it at thetrumpet.com. But this is the following year, 2004, a Ukrainian opposition figure, his name was Viktor Yushchenko, he was seen as hostile to Russia. He fell mysteriously ill as he was campaigning for the presidency. He survived to win the office, but his face was permanently disfigured by what turned out to be dioxin poisoning. 2 years later, Alexander Litvinenko, a former FSB agent and political asylee in Britain, ingested a fatal dose of polonium. An official inquiry concluded that his murder was conducted by the FSB with the likely personal approval of Vladimir Putin. It says the Litvinenko case was a matter of revenge against a man the FSB saw as a traitor. Other Kremlin operations aim more broadly to shape the politics of foreign countries. And then Stevens goes on and gives some examples of that. Well, if you backtrack a little bit, coming into the early stages of his presidency, George W. Bush, there in early 2001, Putin had been in power for, I guess, a little over a year. But George W. Bush, President Bush, met up with Putin in 2001. And if you remember the quote, I guess some would say the now infamous quote, where he said he was able to look into Putin's eyes and to see what kind of a man he was, and that he deemed Putin to be straightforward and trustworthy. And Putin, in return, said that, well, I see the U.S. as a partner that I can work with. And these two hit it off in 2001. This was the reset before the reset. And meanwhile, Putin just keeps carrying on with his heavy-handed policies. In 2003, he froze the assets of the energy giant Yukos. He sent the CEO to a Siberian labor camp for 10 years. And then he took the company's assets and he gave them over to all of his cronies. 2006, same thing. He seized control of a stake in Shell's $20 billion gas project in the Sakhalin Island, and then he gave it over to Gazprom. As I say, some of this we've discussed and covered in the trumpet.com or at the trumpet.com. In 2008, Bob Dudley, he was the head of BP, or I guess he's the head of BP today. He was run out of Russia, one article says. He's fearing for his life. Then in August of 2008, there's the Russian intrusion into South Ossetia. We're coming near to the end of George W. Bush's second term, and by this point, he was saying how Putin was cold-blooded. So much for his trustworthiness. He saw Putin for what he was, more clearly, in 2008, a cold-blooded killer. Well, as you know, President Obama was campaigning all through that year, 2008. He was out there criticizing George W. Bush's estrangement from Russia. It's because you're the, you know, you're the sharpshooting cowboy. Of course you can't get along with Putin. I can. Obama was voted in, and that led up to the, again, some would say the infamous plastic red reset button that Hillary Clinton, then Secretary of State, presented to Vladimir Putin. Well, here again, it didn't take long for reality to set in. You know about the open mic admission from March of 2012. President Obama leaning over there near Dmitry Medvedev, asking for him to ask Putin to give him a little bit of space. He said, after the election, I'll have more flexibility. And then he ridiculed Mitt Romney, if you remember, in the debates. Romney said Russia's still a threat. Obama responded by saying the 1980s are calling and they want their foreign policy back. Well, as it turns out, Romney was right. And then we've seen all of these aggressive and hostile acts. In 2014, Russia moving against Crimea, Ukraine, setting its sights now on the Baltic states. And here we are at the end of 2016, along comes Donald Trump. And history's repeating itself again. He is the one now that has what it takes to reach out to Vladimir Putin to make peace with the cold-blooded killer, to make peace with the Russian dictator, to make deals with the Russian dictator. We played this clip for you a week or two ago. This was what Donald Trump said, I think, about a year ago on MSNBC, clip number 6.
Do you like Vladimir Putin's comments about you?
Sure. When people call you brilliant, it's always good, especially when the person heads up Russia.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it also is a person that kills journalists, political opponents, and
invades countries.
And invades countries. Obviously, that it would be a concern, would it not?
He's running his country, and at least he's a leader, you know, unlike what we have in this country.
No, but again, he kills journalists that don't agree with him.
Well, I think our country does plenty of killing also, Joe. So.
That's Donald Trump about a year ago. He's a strong leader. I kind of like him. And, well, our country does a lot of killing, too. So along comes another American president, in this case the president-elect, who, like George W. Bush in 2001, like President Barack Obama in 2009, is certain that he has what it takes to tone Putin down and to draw up all kinds of common alliances between the United States and Russia. Victor Davis Hanson wrote about this in his latest piece, suggesting that Trump may come into office and emphasize these commonalities, going after radical Islam, and how that Trump, his pro-American nationalism, how that it can resonate with the nationalist Putin, and how that the United States no doubt will turn a blind eye to all of the human rights abuses going on in Russia. These are two strong leaders, two proud leaders. Why shouldn't they be able to get along? Why shouldn't they be able to trust one another? It says here in Hansen's piece, what is not is that Trump, like George W. Bush eye-gazing in 2001 and Barack Obama's plastic red button in 2009, will seek some sort of understanding with Vladimir Putin, albeit with far less idealistic expectations than his sometimes starry-eyed predecessors. But like his predecessors, Trump believes that he alone has the power. He alone has the proper formula, rather, and temperament to make it work. Well, he's trying to make it work with the prophesied Prince of Rosh. My father just taped a program on this subject yesterday for the Key of David. That'll be coming out, I guess, in a week and a half or so. The Prince of Rosh, mentioned there in Ezekiel 38. That's who these American leaders are trying to make peace with after all these years, 25 years on. And here you see the Russian Empire, Russian imperialism. It's back. It's on the march. And leaders in Manasseh trying to reach out to and to make peace with, to extend an olive branch to this Russian dictator, this cold-blooded killer. Quite unlike the approach Reagan took back in the 80s. Brad McDonald had a piece at the Trumpet last year, I guess, about a little over a year ago, where he said in the West, we made some of these points on Monday's show, but he said in the West, many see Russian President Vladimir Putin more as a schoolyard bully than a ruthless tyrant. He's mischievous and unfriendly, but his behavior, we tell ourselves, is the result of insecurity. If we ignore him, he'll grow out of it. Victor Davis Hanson brought this out in his article, some of the criticisms President Obama has leveled at Putin here of late. Well, you know, his body language is this way, and, you know, like he's just kind of a bully, a schoolyard bully, and that's it. Brad McDonald says, we must not be deceived by Vladimir Putin. There's ample evidence of what this man is about and what he's capable of, more than enough to undermine the naive perspective so many have of him. Many of those who ignore this reality are going to suffer for doing so. That's what's coming. If you ignore the reality about the Prince of Rosh, you're going to suffer for doing so. Brad McDonald says, Putin is a cruel, calloused tyrant with an intense determination to emasculate the West, especially America, to expand Russian power, and to establish Russia as the world's leading nation. He's taken Crimea and decimated Ukraine. He's building alliances with the East that are designed to undermine the West. Now he's forging himself as the supreme authority in the Middle East and the linchpin of Mideast politics. This man wants to be the supreme world authority. Leaders of the United States and Britain appear willfully blind to the nature of Vladimir Putin. He's not the schoolyard bully with a penchant for creating mischief and occasionally stepping over the line. He is much more than a macho man caricature who sells himself as a bastion of conservative traditional values. This man is a killer. We could add, to quote George W. Bush, once his eyes were opened to the truth, this man is a cold-blooded killer. He's changing the course of history, Brad McDonald says. Well, you can look over at that prophecy in Ezekiel 38, where God says, Son of man, set your face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, and prophesy against them, or prophesy rather against him, specifically against him. And you look at the chapter as a whole, and clearly you see it's for the end time. Gog is referring to Russia. The land of Magog includes China. And so here, as Brad McDonald wrote in that piece last year, here we see these two massive powers coming together, this alliance in the East, and it's all designed to undermine the West. Meshach there in Ezekiel 38:2, that's just another name for Moscow. But the other fascinating bit about verse 2, Ezekiel 38 and verse 2, is that word chief, which comes from the Hebrew word rosh. Rosh. The King James there translates the word as an adjective, but really it should be, as my father's brought out in his writings, it should be a proper noun. Rosh. The prince of Rosh, prophesy against him. The prince of Russia, prophesy against him. Well, we'll have to look forward to my father's program here in a week and a half. And as I understand it, he's taken some of his recent writings on Ezekiel 38 and on the Prince of Rosh and has put together a booklet to be advertised on that upcoming program. We have that, of course, coming out together with the newly revised and expanded book, Russia and China in Prophecy. Bible prophecy, of course, is being fulfilled 25 years on. 25 years ago today, Mikhail Gorbachev announced that today is the end of the Soviet Union, but it certainly did not end communism or dictatorships, as that Kasparov article pointed out, and I read this on Monday. You have some 2.7 billion people today on Earth living under the thumb of a tyrant. They're gaining strength, these dictatorships, these powers like Russia. Putin's been ruling Russia now for going on 17 years. Pretty amazing how quickly things have changed, as I brought out on Monday, right around the time of that wall coming down in Berlin. Prophetically, we entered into a time period known or described in Revelation 10 as a period of no more delay. When we come back, we'll talk about the significance of that wall coming down in Berlin and how it impacted Germany, and how it impacted Europe, and how it impacted other prophecies, earth-shaking prophecies. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you know where to send the message, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. America's status as the world's lone superpower is rapidly fading. Other nations and groups of nations are angling to fill the void. Rising in the East is an emerging power block of tremendous potential in manpower, economic heft, and military might. Its growing presence is intensifying global competition for resources and for geopolitical influence. Where will this trend lead? What does this mean for you? Biblical prophecy provides a remarkable, penetrating preview of Asia's future. Request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. This book exposes in startling detail what Russia and China are doing and will do, and how they will affect your life. Also, you'll be sent a free one-year subscription to The Trumpet magazine. The Trumpet looks at today's headlines through the clear light of Bible prophecy. The Trumpet will keep you up to date on the continuing rise of the powers in the East by taking a hard look at today's news and comparing it to the prophecies of the Bible. The Trumpet magazine is this world's most informed news magazine. To learn more, request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. Act today and request Russia and China in Prophecy. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
And I invite Mr. Gorbachev, let us work to bring the eastern and western parts of the city closer together so that all the inhabitants of all Berlin can enjoy the benefits that come with life in one of the great cities of the world.
That again is President Ronald Reagan from his Tear Down This Wall speech given in Berlin on June 12, 1987, urging Secretary General Gorbachev to work together with him to bring the eastern and western parts of the city closer together. And of course, from a prophetic standpoint, we knew, Herbert Armstrong knew, that that had to happen, not only in Berlin. It had to happen in Europe as a whole. The eastern and western parts of that continent had to come more closely together, all in fulfillment of Bible prophecy. And Herbert Armstrong was talking about that decades before this happened, decades before the wall in Berlin came down. And we've been reminding you of this over and again. Look at the significance of what happened there on November 9th, 1989. And then later, when the Soviet Union dissolved and the way was cleared for Germany to reunite and for Europe to come together. We had an article back in 2009 at thetrumpet.com based upon newly revealed communications between world leaders. This, I believe, was coming out of the Kremlin, 20 years on from the Berlin Wall coming down. And we wrote at thetrumpet.com, 20 years ago, as Germany moved forward, this was from 2009, remember, as Germany moved toward reunification, leaders in Britain, France, and Russia feared that a newly united Germany would threaten the security of Europe. And so you have all of the applause. You heard some of it on those clips from Reagan's speech. You had all of the public statements. This is great. This is a victory for freedom. The Soviet Union is gone. Democracy can advance. And yet behind the scenes, you had world leaders concerned about this new reality. Germany united. Our Trumpet piece says official transcripts of Kremlin meetings smuggled out of Moscow and published in the Times Online Thursday show that then Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher told Russian leader Mikhail Gorbachev that Britain did not want a united Germany. That's Margaret Thatcher, who had a close political marriage with Ronald Reagan. I mean, they had their occasional disputes, like over the Falkland Islands crisis. Back in, when was that, 1982? And then this, I mean, she certainly stood with Reagan in resisting against and even fighting communism, the spread of communism. But she let it be known privately that she was not in favor of a united Germany. It says here, a separate set of documents published by the British Foreign Office show that French President François Mitterrand feared a united Germany too. This article says that Mitterrand even considered a French-Soviet military alliance to stop it from happening. Well, we've got to prevent this from happening, they were saying back in the late 1980s, early 1990s. It goes on and says that the Russian leaders were concerned about it as well. The Times Kremlin papers show that Russians also were worried about a united Germany. Premier of the Soviet Union, Nikolai Ryzhkov, told Gorbachev that if Germany was allowed to reunify on its own terms, then in 20 or 30 years, Germany will start another world war. So the wall comes down in 1989, and here we are today. We're 25 years on from the Soviet Union's collapse, and we're going on 27, 28 years since the wall came down in Berlin. And Germany being allowed to reunify basically on its own terms. And this Russian leader saying at the time, well, 20, 30 years from now, it may take some time. It may take some years for it to build up its strength and power. But you watch, 20 or 30 years from now, Germany's going to start another world war. You go back to the national characteristics or nature, like Hans Morgenthau talked about with respect to Russia. This has been in their history. Let's talk about Germany's history for a moment. This says Jacques Attali, advisor to the French president, was equally concerned. He told one of Gorbachev's senior aides that French leaders questioned whether Russia's lack of interference in the fall of the Berlin Wall meant that the USSR has made peace with the prospect of a united Germany and will not take any steps to prevent it. This has caused a fear approaching panic, he said. This advisor to the French president. This has caused a fear approaching panic. He says further, or it says, Attali later told Mitterrand that he was so scared of a united Germany that should it come to pass, he would like to fly off to live on Mars. Thatcher believed that a united Germany was so much of a threat that she was willing to work with Gorbachev to stop it from happening. The British Prime Minister asked to go off the record while she told Gorbachev her real opinion on German reunification. Although this conversation was not recorded, Kremlin officials reproduced it from memory after the meeting was over. The reunification of Germany is not in the interest of Britain and Western Europe, she said. It might look different from public pronouncements and official communique at NATO meetings, but it's not worth paying one's attention to it. We do not want a united Germany, she is supposed to have said. This would have led to a change to post-war borders, and we cannot allow that because such development would undermine the stability of the whole international situation and could endanger our security. This piece says that she was horrified by reports that the Bundestag in Bonn, that they sang Deutschland über alles when the wall was coming down. Germany above all. Germany above all in the world. That's what it's wanted historically. You can look at the history. That's what Russia wants, like Brad McDonald wrote in his piece. It says further, her worries persisted. In 1990, Thatcher told Gorbachev, all Europe is watching this, not without a degree of fear, remembering very well who started the two world wars. This is from 1990. These are comments coming from the Iron Lady. And of course, when you see what she did say on the record later on, that quote from 1995 in particular, the one that that we've referred to often, it gives quite a lot of credibility to Russia's take on this dialogue following the fall of the Berlin Wall. Thatcher said in 1995, you have not anchored Germany to Europe. You've anchored Europe to a newly dominant, unified Germany. And in the end, my friends, you'll find it won't work. It's astounding what these leaders in Britain, in France, in Russia were saying. Even as people were cheering loudly during that speech by Reagan in 1987, and then physically bringing that wall down in November of 1989. I mean, really, Ronald Reagan was about the only one who didn't fear a reunited Germany. Look at all of the pieces in play here. I mean, here's Reagan, and we've talked about him a fair bit over the past many months. It's a fascinating study, the couple books that I went through over the summer. And just the respect and the awe that he had for God, the creator God. And then the almost obsession he had for going after the Soviet Union, preventing it from expanding, and eventually bringing it down. And all of that had to happen. All of that had to happen for Revelation 17 to be fulfilled. All of that had to happen for the 10 kings to come together. And so Reagan took down the Soviet Union, but he certainly didn't destroy that Russian spirit, that Russian nationalist character. And as it happens, he cleared the way for this, for what we see happening in Europe today. Let me take you to a clip by Herbert Armstrong. This is an older one from one of his old radio programs, talking about this seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire to come out of Europe.
It does specifically tell us of one of the phases of World War that we believe is now the next one that we will call World War III. And it is not coming from the power and the source that we seem to suspect. No, we in the United States, my friends, seem to be so stupid, we never can tell where our real enemy is until after he strikes. We can only see one enemy at a time, and I want to tell you that the United States has more than one enemy.
That's from Herbert Armstrong decades ago, back in the 1960s, perhaps. We can only see one enemy at a time. In 1989, in 1991, I mean, that enemy was the Soviet Union. And like Garry Kasparov wrote in that Wall Street Journal piece over the weekend, once the Soviet Union collapsed, then we relaxed. We went to sleep. And even to this day, we don't see another potential enemy in Europe, at least not in judging by the public comments. But back in 1989, back in 1990, I mean, you still had quite a few world leaders that were close enough to that history coming out of World War II that knew this is dangerous, what we're considering here. Just stepping aside, clearing the way for Berlin to unite, for Germany to unite, for Europe to unite. That 2009 Trumpet article, the one where we talked about all of those private communications, world leaders expressing concern. Right at the end of that piece, we wrote at the Trumpet, history alone warns that a unified Germany will threaten Europe and, in today's era of advanced weaponry, threaten the whole world. History teaches us this. We said these leaders were right to be worried. For years, the Trumpet and its predecessor, the Plain Truth, have been issuing exactly the same warning. Germany has been expanding economically and politically within the EU. Very soon it will be expanding militarily, just like these leaders feared. Watch for this to happen, we said. Watch for it. It's coming. And on Monday's show, well, GermanForeignPolicy.com, it wasn't just Monday. But for weeks now, for months, it's been talking about the militarization of Europe, and how that this is something Germany has wanted for a long time, and now they're getting it. Now they're getting it as they see Donald Trump coming into office. Just certain he's going to have wonderful relations with Russia. And Germany knowing what kind of a threat Russia poses. And Europe waking up to the fact that a NATO without a strong United States is a NATO that we can't trust. And so we've got to look to ourselves. And things are changing dramatically in Europe, in Berlin, in Brussels, as they begin to make ready this military machine that your Bible prophesies. And then, oh, what about the change in leadership? Daniel 8, we know about this too. A strong man is coming. Brad McDonald on yesterday's program filling in for me. He really laid it out there and then I think followed up with an article as well. You can see both at thetrumpet.com. Here you have this massive terrorist attack that hits Germany right in this unified city, this multicultural city, the city of Berlin. And it comes right at the Christmas season and does this spell the end of Angela Merkel's career? That's what the Telegraph says. This in today's Telegraph, the general assumption that the perpetrator was a Muslim migrant means that Chancellor Merkel is being held personally responsible for what is widely perceived as an attack on Germany's Christian tradition. She's being held personally responsible. They had a picture headlined at Drudge all day yesterday with her, a picture of Angela Merkel with blood on her hands. The Telegraph says, not since 1986, when the bombing of a Berlin disco frequented by American GIs provoked a massive U.S. airstrike on Libya, has the German capital suffered a terrorist attack of comparable significance. Not since 1986. And this was how the U.S. responded, because it involved a disco club frequented by American GIs. And so America hit Libya and hit Libya hard. 1986 is the year that Herbert Armstrong died. And just a few short years later, the wall came down and we entered into a time of no more delay. And this week, Berlin gets hit by radical Islam. And that brings to mind another prophecy, Daniel 11 and verse 40. Brad McDonald went through that yesterday. All of these prophecies being fulfilled. How could you go to sleep at a time such as this, prophetically speaking? How could you turn a blind eye to what's happening in Germany, in Europe, in Iran, in Russia, in the United States? This from a website. Richard Palmer sent me this morning. Smallwarsjournal.com. The title of the piece, Could Europe Fear Germany Again? Could Europe fear Germany again? It says here, President-elect Donald Trump hasn't taken the oath of office or outlined his administration's plans for the nation's foreign policy, but his election has already forced the United States' European allies to contemplate a future where the United States might no longer underwrite Europe's security. See, it seemed from America's perspective, it seemed like the perfect step to take. Mr. Gorbachev, bring this wall down. Bring this beautiful city back together. The city of Berlin. Let Germany reunite, and we're still the United States of America. We're still strong. We'll still be the NATO umbrella. We'll still keep the peace. Well, now look at where we are 25 years later, where you have the United States in full-scale retreat, where you have Donald Trump saying, I don't know if we want to really take the lead in NATO anymore. We've been paying way more than our fair share. It's time for you, Germany, to step up. Forget about the warnings of world leaders in 1990 or 1991, whether they were public or private. This is a new time. I mean, we're in a new era. We can make peace with Putin. Europe can defend itself. Iran can be controlled. What a dangerous, dangerous time we're heading into. It says, faced with an American president who has dismissed alliances such as NATO while denigrating liberal values, Germany will assume an increasingly consequential role as a leader in the turbulent transatlantic order while it takes gradual steps to shore up its lagging military capabilities. Well, I would say the steps right now aren't so gradual. They're happening fast. It says, but the prospect of nationalist victories in important European elections next year raises an under-discussed question as the European project comes under unprecedented strain and prepares to face a president who promises to turn the United States away from the world. Could a fractured and increasingly nationalistic Europe come to fear a more powerful Germany again? It's a good question to consider. With an America that's turning away from the world? With a newly resurgent imperialist Russia on the march? With all of these nationalist movements in Europe? With Angela Merkel on the way out, most likely? Could a fractured and increasingly nationalistic Europe come to fear a more powerful Germany again? Is history repeating itself? Could this all happen again? It says here, could a remilitarized Germany surrounded by increasingly Eurosceptic and nationalist governments one day rekindle old fears about German power? Germany's economic might has already unleashed resentment about Berlin's influence in Europe. During the Euro crisis, Germany's insistence that peripheral states embrace austerity led to anti-German protests. It says the United Kingdom's impending departure from the EU will only further elevate Germany's leading role in Europe. Well, that brings to mind another prophecy. 10 kings coming out of the heart of Europe, and Britain won't be part of it. That's what Herbert Armstrong said on more than one occasion, going back 50, 60, 70 years ago. It's all unfolding just as your Bible has prophesied. Pretty amazing. Written 2,000, 3,000 years in advance? Astounding. It says later, while this on its own won't lead to the destabilization of the continent, any scenario in which the project of European integration unravels might. If nationalist parties make gains or take outright control in elections next year in Italy, the Netherlands, and France, it is possible that the EU as we know it today will not survive. In that scenario, Germany, having laid the groundwork to boost spending and investment in military capabilities, could inadvertently resurrect fear of its intentions. But what does Europe have to fear of a liberal Germany that just so happens to have a strong military to defend itself? Well, you've got to look at history. If you're unwilling to look into the Bible and Bible prophecy, look at history. And then open your eyes and watch world events. Miss Merkel is going to pay a heavy political price for what happened just this week. I mean, she's not only been kind to the incoming Muslim refugees, she's leading the way. Germany's welcomed more in than any other nation on earth. And all along, like Brad McDonald covered yesterday, all along, there's been one assurance after another. This is good. We can handle this. They're peace-loving immigrants. They're not going to lash out at us. They're not going to strike us. And then when they did, that was carefully concealed by a media. And now you have what could potentially be Germany's 9/11, like Brad McDonald covered yesterday. It's moving along pretty fast. Jesus said to watch and pray always. Watch and pray always. Revelation 17 and verse 10, the ten horns which you saw are 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings. 1 hour with the beast. That verse refers to the United States of Europe. Those 10 horns are part of the 7th head. It's the same as the 10 toes in Daniel 2. 10 heads of state. The European Union as we know it, that article says, as we know it today, is about to change. It's going to die. The way it is in its present system, it's going to move over, just like the Soviet Union did in 1991. And then what comes out from it? Well, lo and behold, here we are 25 years on. Putin's been in power for 17 years. You have a newly resurgent imperialist Russia. And so what comes out of the ashes of this European Union project of 28 member states? What comes out of those ashes? And quickly, it's these 10 kings. It's these 10 heads of state, with Germany taking the lead role, guided by a strong man, together with the good graces of a great universal church, and all in fulfillment of numerous Bible prophecies. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we put the finishing touches on another program. Email the show, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.